Taped from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, John Trumbull, and with me is my adult black son, Darren Patterson.
Hi, everybody. It's me, the adult black son.
Don't look. How you doing, Darren?
I'm doing well. Don't look into that. It's not weird at all.
No. Yeah, don't do the math on that.
Right. Yeah, this is actually how I found out that our new speaker does have an adult black son, apparently, that he doesn't speak about. It's kind of a secret. I was like, oh, that's a thing? I better look into that.
What is this with, like, Republican folks in Congress just, like, having random children? You know, Mike Johnson has an adult black son. George Santos is, like, just carrying around this random baby.
Yeah, it's
it's weird, right?
I know, you know, no child is supposed to be left behind, but this is very odd.
Yeah. It's
quite odd.
It's very weird. But hey, folks, how you doing? We're here. We're back. We're your podcast buddies, the SNL Nerds. And we're here to talk about the latest episode of SNL with Nate Bargatze hosting, Foo Fighters musical guesting. It's season 49, episode 3 from October 28th, 2023. I can't believe we're nearly through October. That's crazy, pants.
I know, dude. End of this week. We're in November. It's bonkers.
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't know it by the weather because, up here on the East Coast, I think it got up to like 80 degrees on Saturday, which is... it's a little concerning to say the least.
Yeah, it's weird.
And I think like by this week, it's going to like shoot down to like the 60s and maybe even 50s, which, again, a little concerning.
Just a bit.
So the end is nigh, abandoned all hope, and we're going to go down podcasting people the way the good Lord.
I guess so. This is how we're spending the apocalypse. We are doing a podcast about Saturday Night Live because, right. You know, what better use of our time when the world is coming to an end?
We're podcasting on the Titanic as it sinks slowly into the ocean.
Yeah. Wow.
Was that too dark? I feel like I got too
dark. I mean, this started out, kind of dark. We're in a weird, dark place, you know.
Yeah, I mean, me literally, I'm in a closet right now. But yeah,
that's true. Not in a metaphorical closet. He is in a literal closet. Yes, people
with a door and everything.
Yes.
This episode. I mean, Nate Bargatze. Again, he's like somebody who not everybody knows, he's extremely popular. He's a comedian. He's a clean comic for one thing, which I remember. And not a lot of people know him, but he is extremely popular in like the Midwest and the South. I looked into his tour dates. He's actually going to be performing in here in New Jersey at the Prudential Center where the New Jersey Devils play. So that gives you an idea of how big he is. So
to
see him like host this thing is like, it's still pretty wild. And overall, I think he did. I mean, he stumbled a little bit here and there, but overall, I think he did an okay enough job.
I think he was a decent host. I think he was. It became very apparent in a couple places. Like he's not a trained actor.
No, not at all.
And so he was a little stiff in places, but I would definitely take an accomplished stand-up who's not a trained actor after. Oh, I don't know. A musician who doesn't speak English as a first language as a host.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, just to throw out a totally random hypothetical.
Just totally random, you say?
Yes. Okay. I think if you have a stand-up who's, you know, maybe his acting chops aren't that great, I think you're probably going to get a better show than a musician whose English is not his first language.
Yeah, I mean, I think with Nate, it is a thing where as we saw in his monologue, his thing is his delivery is very kind of monotone, and he kind of
he's dry,
very very dry, like Melba toast. But I think it's the first dry thing I thought of. But I think the roles he was playing kind of lend itself to that. Like he wasn't doing any roles where he had to do like a lot of big act outs or, you know, just like play it big. Like they were, I think they knew what he was, what he could deliver and what he could do. And they kind of wrote to that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think they accommodated him well. So, yeah. Well, should we get into it?
Let's get into it. Cold open.
Cold open. Biden Halloween cold open. A Halloween message from President Joe Biden. First surprise of the evening, not James Austin Johnson playing Joe Biden.
What?
Yeah. We've switched over to Mikey Day.
Yeah.
I think has played Biden briefly in the past, as I recall.
I don't think so. I think this might have been the first time. Because like I remember, you know, Moffitt playing Biden, and then they went.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
And then they gave it to Jim Carrey, of course.
Yeah, and that obviously was never going to last long term.
Yeah, but then I believe this is Mikey's first time doing it.
They went through so many Bidens, it's tough for me to keep track and remember, honestly. And, you know, looking at it, it looked like he was taking a lot from James Austin Johnson's impression.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, he has the same sort of breathiness that James does.
Yeah, no, he definitely took a page out of JAJ's Biden and just like did that. It seemed like he added more out of breathness to it. Like every sentence,
yeah.
He's like, hey guys, come on. Yeah.
He's definitely pushing it further into the realm of caricature, I think. And I was, you know, like for half the sketch, I'm thinking like, well, why is the show doing it? It's not like James Austin Johnson was doing a bad job with Biden. And the one reason I could think of was I'm thinking if Trump ends up being the Republican nominee, I think Lauren would definitely wants different people playing the two candidates.
Yeah.
Just for logistical reasons. So
yeah, that's like the pretty popular theory I've seen floating around online, and it makes the most sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was the only thing I could think of. I don't think it's any reflection on James Austin Johnson. I think it was just like, okay, well, you know, you do a better Trump than a Biden. So, because Biden's a tough guy to get a handle on comedically, you know?
Yeah. I don't think, I mean, out of all the Bidens we've seen and even the Biden impressions I've seen, you know, like online or on like late night shows or whatever, I still don't think anybody's like kind of cracked the code just yet. I really haven't seen like the definitive Biden impression just yet. Like it's a hard person. It's a hard caricature to get a handle on.
Yeah. It's he is a tough guy to pin down comedically. You know, I think the people I've seen come the closest are probably James Austin Johnson and Dana Carvey. When I've seen him do a Biden impression, he does a pretty good one. So,
okay. All right. But,
I mean, what'd you think of this sketch, of this cold open?
I thought it was okay. I mean, the fact that it's short, I always like. The beginning part of the sketch, I wasn't quite understand, because like it just basically has him, Biden, talking about, hey, come on, guys, it's Halloween. Yeah, something to be had. And like, and the first part of the sketch is like him climbing up a ladder to hang up Halloween decorations. And I thought something would come of that. Like, of course, you know, you see anybody go up a ladder on SNL, you automatically think Chevy Chase. So I thought like he was going to fall over or something was going to happen.
But yeah.
Nothing happened. He just walked up the ladder. He's like, yeah, I'm doing it. And he hung up some decorations. It's like, all right, we did it. And then he just walked back down the ladder. I was like, well, what the fuck?
I think the joke was you were supposed to be expecting him to tumble and fall. You know, because Biden has had, you know, more than a few incidents where he's like stumbled on stairs going up to Air Force One or something like that. Mm. So I think they were leading up to that. I don't know. I can get on board with the Biden is clumsy thing. I can't really get on board with the, you know, oh, Biden is old and addled narrative.
Yeah.
That some people want to try to push, because I don't really see much of that.
Yeah, because, I mean, he's not that much older than Trump. And, like, Trump really doesn't get saddled with that old man label. I mean, he gets saddled with, like, a whole lot of other labels. All deserved. But, like, he doesn't get saddled with that old man label the same way Joe does. And maybe it's because Trump seems younger because he's angry and screamy and slams his fist like a toddler. So maybe that's why he seems younger.
Maybe because he has that weird cotton candy hair instead of, like, you know, white hair like a human being.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably it.
You know, maybe that's, he reads younger to some people. Because, yeah, I think there's only like 4 years of difference between the two of them.
Yeah, like one's a high school senior and the other's like a sophomore. It's like they're basically in the same class.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, like, but this part I thought was like, I don't know. It seemed like they were kind of trailing around for a bit. I wasn't exactly sure where this cold open was going. And then we go into Michael Longfellow coming into the sketch as a new Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson.
Yes, who is just like this random Republican that hardly anyone has heard of, it seems, who's now the Speaker of the House. And he's like, you know, this big Bible-thumping guy who...
Yeah, his...
Yeah.
Let's not. If we go into it, we're gonna get depressed. Let's not.
Yeah. Let's. Yeah.
He brings up the fact that he has an adult, black son. Devin Walker comes in, and you know they mention the fact that he's only his quote unquote son is only like 11 years younger than him.
But he's also named Michael.
Yeah, but don't look into that.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, it's kind of like that movie. God, I'm blanking on the name of the movie now. The Blind Side?
That's it.
Is that it?
Yep.
Yeah, The Blind Side. And he's like, which, you know, is a story that totally holds up. Right. And don't look into it too closely.
Right, exactly. So it's basically them playing on the fact that Mike Johnson is a totally forgettable person with a totally forgettable name and a secret black son that that he doesn't talk about, really.
Yeah, we don't know much about. It's so weird.
It's very, very weird.
And then we have a totally random cameo, a very welcome cameo. Christopher Walken comes in as the Spirit of Halloween, a.k.a. Papa Pumpkin.
Papa Pumpkin, as I'm known in South America. I don't know. I've never been.
Yeah, and this, I was reading this was Walken's first appearance on the show since 2008.
It's been a minute, yeah.
Which, wow.
It's been a minute. I think Keenan was just gotten there. It's probably been there for like 4 years at that point, right? Or something like that.
Keenan had only been at SNL for like two centuries at that point.
Yes, of course. Exactly. You gotta like chop down a redwood and count the rings to know how long he's been there.
Exactly.
But yeah, look, I know on the last episode I've talked about how all these celebrity cameos that they've had on the past two shows have been a little much. Mm-hmm. But a Christopher Walken cameo, I ain't mad at that.
I mean, because it's Walken, I'm happy with it. I feel like the show is starting to get a little too reliant on the celebrity cameos again.
Yeah, a little bit.
But
it, yeah, I will. Yeah, that is kind of a thing. But yeah, if it's a Walken in cameo, I'll be like, all right, it's Walken, let him in.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, we just need to appreciate Christopher Walken for all the years we have left with that guy, because he's a treasure.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, of course he comes in with just Walken being Walken, talking about, you know, the spirit of Halloween, and you know, walking up to people saying hello, because you can't spell Halloween without hello.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course there's the at one point he recites the a poem, and he recites the trick or treat smell my feet poem.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, of course he ends with like, come on baby, let me smell those feet.
Yeah
Yeah, like I mean this cold open I thought was kind of whatever, but I think Walken at the end kind of saved a little for me, just because it's just Walken being weird, and I do have a soft spot in my heart for that.
Yeah, it's just nice to see him, you know? it's been a long time since I've even seen him do like a movie comedy, so.
Yeah, it's been a
minute. It's just nice to see him pop up on SNL again.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I would say this cold open was kind of middling, but Walken saved it at the end, I'll say.
Yeah, exactly. We'll grade it on a curve, I guess.
Yes, absolutely.
Next we have Nate Bargatze's monologue. He had a good line when he came out. He says, you know, if you're at home, I'm as shocked as you are.
Like, I don't know how I got here either.
Yeah, he explains he's from Tennessee and the 1900s.
Which you know, is, yeah, that's a real thing. Like, where sometimes I, like, it kind of takes me a minute to, like, oh, yeah, there's like a whole bunch of people now who were born in the 2000s now.
Who are legal adults.
Who are legal adults, exactly. So if you were born
They're adult people. They can, like, rent cars and stuff.
It's crazy, right? It's not just me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you are crazy and it's not just you. Okay. I mean, those are two mutually exclusive things.
I'll take that. But yeah, it's a thing. If you were born in a year with 1 and 9 in front of it, you are an old, apparently.
You are an old. Yes, this is true. You are an old, or at the very least, on your way to being an old.
Yes, exactly. Just take care of your knees. Sign up for that AARP card. It's all coming. It's all coming to a head.
Yeah, yeah. Just you know, cap it off at like 2 glasses of wine.
Mm. Get a good night's sleep. Wake up early for that blue plate special the next day.
Yeah, yeah. Get up a couple times during the night to go to the bathroom.
Yeah. Oh, dinner at 4 o'clock. Love it. Mm-hmm. Love it.
Early bird special, baby.
Wee! Buy some comfortable Skechers. What?
Walk into the kitchen, forget why you did it.
Yeah. Then go back. Oh, living the dream.
Yeah. Anyway, so it was a good stand-up set. Just kind of, you know, wide-ranging. He just kind of ping-ponged around to all sorts of topics like shower doors and hotels, which apparently they're higher off the ground than they used to be. I don't know. I haven't gotten a hotel room in ages. So
I did maybe a year or two ago. Like, I did notice that the thing in some hotels where they don't have like a shower curtain anymore, and like it's not like a tub anymore, really. In some showers where it's like a glass door that doesn't, like, you know, cover the entire bathtub, but like it leaves an opening for you to get in, but there's no shower curtain or no shower rod, but there's a glass door. You just kind of walk in and shower, and then like
all. But does the door go all the way to the floor?
It does. Yeah, I mean, at least mine did.
Oh, okay. So, see, I thought he was talking about like the door would be like the door in a changing room where it's like a foot off the ground.
Oh no,
that's why the ground was getting wet.
No. I mean, the glass door goes all the way to the floor, but then. From what I've seen, like, the floor, there is no bathtub. So it's like you walk in to the shower and, like, you know, you shower in there. Okay. But then, like, the water kind of
spills. But it only covers half.
Yeah, then the shower kind of spills out on the floor, but there's a drain to get it. But it's still, like, you're walking on a wet floor.
That's no good.
Yeah. It's the future.
I guess too many people were stealing shower curtains or something. I don't know.
there's a big black marker for shower curtains, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, people steal stuff.
Yeah, it's like, you know, just robes and towels and toilet paper and television sets, but not...
People are animals, Darren. They're going to steal anything that's not nailed down.
That's very true. We're a savage species.
Yeah, we're awful, awful people.
The worst.
And I mean you and me specifically.
Yeah, all right. I was going to defend myself, but I thought about it. I was like, yeah, I'm pretty trash.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've always said so.
Yeah. But yeah, it's basically just a stand-up set he's doing. Yeah, you said it goes through he goes from like topic to topic. Like, I talked about the old county fairs he used to go to, where he talked about how his dad was a magician, and he talked about how donkeys were falling off of high dives at some of these county fairs.
Yeah,
not jumping, falling.
yeah. And he's like, yeah, PETA put a stop to that, and they also put a stop to. A thing where you could have a fist fight with an orangutan, because it was like the 80s and it was before the internet and you couldn't look up how strong is an orangutan.
Yeah. I was like, I was around the 80s. I don't remember that at all.
I was in Tennessee for a good part of the 80s and I don't remember that, but I guess I wasn't going to the right county fairs. So
you got to know the right people. You got to know, you got to have an orangutan
guy. I guess so. Yeah, he talked about how, like, there was like, a 9-year-old in his family who didn't get diagnosed as being deaf until, like, she was 9. And they're like, well, she's rude, I'll tell you that. Which I think is a great line.
That's a pretty good line. I talked about his dad was addicted to Afrin. I get to the thing, like the nasal spray. I was like, oh.
The nasal spray, he was using it for 45 years. And he's like, the back of the bottle says 3 days. There's no medicine where it's like, tell you what, try this for 45 years.
Yeah. If it doesn't work after that, call us.
Yeah, yeah. And he also talked about how reading is the key to smart and how books are the most words. And he wishes that they had a blank page or two just to give him a breather.
Yeah. You know, just a rest period.
Yeah. And I really liked his closing bit about how, you know, he doesn't know much about history. So every history movie he sees, I'm on the edge of my seat. And I saw Pearl Harbor. I was surprised as they were.
That was a pretty good line, too. Yeah.
That's a great line. Okay. I love that. I mean, just really good stuff. I wasn't like ultra familiar with Nate Bargatze's stand up before this, but yeah, I really liked it.
Yeah. I mean, he's basically like, you know, pretty much the everyman. He jokes about a lot of things a lot of people can relate to. And yeah, I think with this, this monologue, he really kind of did that with the audience. Like they kind of got his pacing and his, you know, his vibe overall, like, okay, like he's kind of this kind of has like this deadpan type of delivery, and he kind of works at this speed, but he's also very, you know, just relatable and just kind of like the everyman. So like, I think he won the audience over, quite a bit, if I'd say so myself. And yeah, and give his specials a watch. I know he has two Netflix specials and one on Amazon. So, you know, give him a look-see and see what you think.
Yeah, I've let my Netflix subscription lapse, but I'll have to definitely check out his special on Amazon after this. I'd like to see more of his stuff.
Yeah, no, give it a look-see. There's a reason that he's selling out arenas right now. He's pretty beloved.
Generally, if you're a comic and you're selling out arenas, you're good at what you do.
Yeah, somebody likes you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. You don't play arenas and have it be a bringer, basically.
Oh, that would be the world's worst bringer. Yeah. I'm playing Madison Square Garden, and it's a bringer. I've got to bring 20,000.
So I need all of you to ask like at least 30 people.
I'm capped at like 5,000 Facebook friends, so I need all of you to come and bring 1,000 people apiece. Yes.
We can do this, guys. Come on. I'll cover your drinks.
Anyways, for first sketch of the night after the monologue, we have Chef Show, which on the show itself is called Chef Showdown. What the hell are you doing to us, SNL? Come on.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think somebody, Manette Moriarty, mentioned that, too, that we've talked about.
I saw this. Yeah, she was talking about this on Twitter today. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I think... because actually I thought about it, and it's like, yeah, that does make the most sense. Because, like, I think they named them just very generic, basic names, just so it'll be easier for people to search on it and when they go look for it on YouTube. You know, because people are like, well, I don't remember the name of that sketch, but it was, like, on SNL, and it had, like, chefs on it, and it was, like, a show or something like that. And so when they'll just type in chef's show, it'll pop up. They'll be like, oh, there it is.
Yeah. I know, but they're getting so generic now. We literally have a sketch this week that's just called Airplane.
It's for the algorithm, baby. It's for the searches.
It's crazy town.
It's crazy pants, crazy. I get it. I don't love it, but I get it.
Okay, so this is like a cooking competition show. We've got Nate versus Ego, and the challenge for this week is they're preparing soul food. We've got Punky and Keenan as the judges, and they're guessing which of these two chefs has prepared the better soul food dish.
Right.
Now, and they show the two soul food dishes, and one of them looks like really impressive. It's got, you know, like collard greens. Mm. It's got a big hunk of cornbread. Mm. It looked like some roast beef there.
I'm gonna say that was brisket.
Okay, it's got to be brisket. Yeah, brisket seems like more of a soul food thing than roast beef.
Oh, I love me some brisket. Oh, goddamn.
Yeah. Woo! Yeah. I mean, it's mouth-watering. Just look at it. And the rest of it, it looks like something you'd get at like some high-end restaurant like some high-end fusion restaurant where it's just like very small portions and
some pretentious restaurant in Soho or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're saying like, oh, well, this first dish is really great. It's, you know, it's wonderful soul food. And this other one is just like, what are they even doing?
Yeah, like I think Keenan was like, yeah, I'm actually angry at this. I'm pissed off.
Yeah. Like, at one point in the sketch, he, like, actually just pushes the plate off the table.
Right.
And it clatters to the floor, which is kind of funny.
Exactly. So the judges automatically think Ego did dish one. And, of course, Nate Bargatze, who playing Dougie, did dish two. But the twist is, actually, the white guy did dish one. The one with the collard greens.
What?
I know.
What? Wow. Like, people can become adept at cooking dishes that are outside their main culture?
Guys, I'm just as floored as you are.
Wow. That's, and we, you know, they're like, wait, Dougie? And he keeps saying, I'm sorry, throughout.
Right.
Which is, he's like, yeah, I didn't mean to be this good at cooking soul food.
Because even he realizes how this looks and the optics of him beating out. Ego.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. And they're like, Ego, what happened? She's like, I live in France. What do I know from soul food?
Exactly. Then they're like, oh, so Dougie, you must have like you must grew up around black people. And he's like, oh no, I'm from Rhode Island. Then they say, oh wait, no, you guys had sous chefs, right? So maybe they helped you out. So then they bring they bring out the sous chefs. Devin comes out, and they're like, oh, of course. And, of course, Devin is Ego's sous chef, and Mikey Day is Nate's Dougie's sous chef.
100% knew it was going to be Mikey Day, because I was like, okay, they're going to have the whitest guy in the cast come out, and it's going to be Mikey. Because he's just the designated white guy in sketches.
I know. It's like, and I did the collard greens.
Yeah. I mean, like, whenever they want him to do, like, you know, the super white guy stuff, like, you know, he's doing, like, the Cat Williams type thing on the Dave Chappelle show.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they always have Mikey do that, and it's... And it's wonderfully awkward.
Damn, youngin', where you think you is?
Yeah, I mean, it's become one of their go-to moves. But, you know, there's a good reason for it. It's because it works, damn it.
Yeah, it's true. He plays white very well.
He does. He's been practicing it all his life.
So the judges are just more and more baffled about how Ego could create this dish with impossible catfish made out of soy protein. And deconstructive black eyed peas.
Yes. And the Keenan's like, I'm angry just hearing about that.
Yeah. And then that's when like you said, Keenan flipped over that dish off the table while staring at Ego, causing Heidi to break a little.
She did break. She got a little giggly at that point. Kept it together though.
Yeah.
And then to give out the grand prize, they got Padma Lakshmi come out and do a little cameo.
Yeah, cameo number two.
Cameo number two. And she says, you know, the prize is you're going to be a guest on the Black Kitchen and an honored guest at this year's Essence Fest. And he's like, no, I don't want to do that. And you'll be a cultural ambassador for Howard University. Yeah, and they put a Letterman jacket on him. And he's like, oh, no, please take this off me.
That's not bad. The sketch, I'd say. I think it was all right.
It was all right. I didn't really get why it was at the top of the show. I didn't think it was that strong.
Yeah, it's not super strong, but maybe they're trying to ease their way into other material. But other way, not a bad sketch. I thought it was okay.
It was fine. I was like, this is a middle of the show sketch. It's not a lead off the show sketch.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Maybe Padma had to go or something, then they only had her.
she was like, I've got a thing at like at 11:45. Can we just hurry this up a little?
Yeah, I'm Padma Lakshmi. I'm busy.
Yes.
So overall, not a bad start to the show. Not too shabby.
We're on an upswing from last week, definitely.
Yes, absolutely. Next up, we got a pre-tape, Hallmark Horror.
Hallmark Horror, doing a movie called A Stab at Love, which is, I mean, basically the joke here is that instead of every other Hallmark movie and being Christmas themed, this one's Halloween themed. And Chloe Fineman is the lady who comes to her small hometown from the big city and falls in love with the guy who's a serial killer.
Yeah. Her high school crush turned hometown serial killer.
Yes.
And then it hits on all the tropes that you'd see in a Hallmark movie, like two almost attractive actors with two almost human sounding names like Gashly Greigert and Bren Klobog. And and basically all the tropes, like the two of them like on the back of a pickup truck in the autumn, talk and her talking to him about, hey, have you ever thought about getting out of this, leaving this small town? And he's like, I don't know, my roots are here. I guess I just like killing people I know.
Yeah, yeah, because he's just a simple guy. And then we have Mikey come in as the big city fiance, and she's like, oh, this is my friend. He's like, friend, I'm your fiance. And then she's like, no, I should have told you. This was cute. It was short.
I would say short and cute. I did like the line where we see Nate's characters all upset learning that she has a fiance, and he's like, I don't even know if I even want to kill you anymore.
Yeah, yeah. I liked the line towards the end where they said, you know, we cornered the market on Christmas, why not Halloween? Yeah. And they say it's shot entirely on a Samsung Galaxy.
In Estonia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could have used a Sicily voiceover. I mean, James Austin Johnson, he was doing a decent job, but I was like, we really could have used Cicely Strong's voiceover skills here.
Yeah, the voice.
It would have made it feel more like a Hallmark movie, you know?
Yeah, the voiceover was a little off. I think maybe with the voiceover, maybe they were trying to lean more into the horror movie tropes of it rather than the Hallmark trope of it. But
maybe, yeah, maybe. I don't know. I think it would. I think if it had been Cecily or another woman doing it, it would have played up the Hallmarkness and the juxtaposition a little more. But yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. And of course, they also had a line, the only thing female viewers like more than romance is murder.
Yeah. Yeah. That was cute. Yeah.
Boo
meets boyfriend.
Yeah. But
it was cute.
Yeah. I thought it was okay. I thought it was cute. Not too shabby. Not too shabby.
Next, we have a sketch called Washington's Dream.
Yes.
This takes place at an American Army camp in 1777. Nate is playing General Washington. And, you know, they're getting ready for the big battle the next day. They're, you know, it's late at night. They're sitting around the campfire. And they're like, oh, how are we ever going to overcome this? The British have brought in all these other troops. And he's like, well, remembering what we're fighting for. We're fighting to choose our own laws, choose our own leaders, and choose our own weights and measures. And then for the rest of the sketch, he just kind of goes into the whole absurdity of the imperial measurement system, which is pretty funny.
Yeah. No, this was an interesting one. This one was, we have writing credits for this one. This was a Streeter joint.
Yes.
Also helped out by August White. And yeah, this one, I didn't see this one coming because, yeah, it is like one of those sketches where it's all talking. It's a very dialogue-heavy sketch. It kind of reminded me of, like, a sketch I would have seen in the 80s. Maybe something that, I don't know, maybe, like, Jim Downey would have written back in the day, where, like, it's all dialogue, but there are jokes in there. It's all, like, joke-heavy, like you said.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a very funny sketch, I thought.
Yeah, no, I'd go so far as to say this might be the sketch of the night.
It's definitely my sketch of the night. I mean, he's talking about how, you know, like we'll have a pound and then 2,000 pounds is called a ton. And they're like, well, what is 1,000 pounds called? And there's like, there's no word for that.
Right.
And there'll be 12 inches in a foot and 3 feet in a yard. And how many feet in a mile? 5,280. It's a civil number that everyone will remember.
Right. And then he says things like, yeah, we'll measure liquids and liters and milliliters, but only for soda, wine, and alcohol. For milk and paint, we go with gallons and quarts. And it's like,
yes.
Well, how many liters are in a gallon, sir? Nobody knows.
Yeah, yeah. And the moment of the sketch for me was when Keenan's character just says, and the slaves, sir? What of them? And then Nate, as General Washington, just goes, you asked about the temperature. And Keenan just says, totally deadpan, I did not. And there's just this awkward pause.
I did like that runner of Keenan talking about, yeah, we're all going to be treated equal, right? And him just not answering that question at all.
Yeah, and then was immediately changing the subject. I really love that. I mean, this was... It was just wonderfully absurd. I really like this one. This one made me laugh and smile the most.
This was a good one. I also like he talked about how for temperature they're gonna go into the measurement of Fahrenheit. And he's like, can you spell that for me? Impossible.
No.
Because no one can spell Fahrenheit.
No, you just start typing. You hope you get close enough that Google recognizes what you're trying to say, and then you just go with their correction. That's how you spell Fahrenheit.
If I spelled it, it would look like fair height.
Yeah, it's like a F-A-I-R, and then I think there's an H-E-I-N in there somewhere, but I mean, who can say?
You think there's a G in there, but there's not.
No.
Oof, it's a mess. But yeah, this sketch was pretty fantastic. I really liked it. It's like a sketch that's that's really all dialogue, and you really got to kind of pay attention to it. It's not a sketch you can like watch passively. It's really a sketch you got to pay attention. I don't want to say it's like a thinking man sketch, because it's not really.
It is a thinking man sketch. I'm going to say it if you don't have the guts to. Right. It's a thinking man sketch. You have to know measurements and shit.
Right. See, it's the sketch ain't for you dum-dums.
No. It's not for you people using the metric system.
cerebral, baby. But,
yeah. I was surprised. Streeter said in his post about it that it had been floating around for a while, and I'm like, how does this not get put up immediately? What the hell?
I don't know. Yeah, but this sketch was so much better than a good number of sketches we've seen in the past. But yeah, I really dug this one quite a bit, for sure.
Yeah, me too. Good stuff. Mm-hmm. Next, we have another pre-tape.
Lake Beach.
This was called Lake Beach, yes. It's a fake country band called Mud Puddle. They're singing a song called Down on Lake Beach.
Mm-hmm.
Just talking all about partying down on a beach, a lake beach.
Right. This one was written by J.A.J., Dismukes, Dan Bulla, and Street. I think Streeter had a hand in this as well. Directed by Mike Diva, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
And yeah, like I had a feeling that they might do something like this because, Bargetti is from the South, J.A.J. Yeah. is from the South, Dismukes is from the South. So I was like, there's a good chance they might do we might get a sketch about the South. And sure enough.
You were right, sir.
Sure enough, we did. I'm a Northern boy. I'm a coastal elite. So, we have like beaches here. So I don't know much about lake beaches, but I got it. It's like, all right. So it's basically a beach by a lake instead of an ocean. And apparently.
Yeah. It's pretty much exactly what it says on the tin.
Yeah, exactly. And, it's like a thing where the country folks go down and drink and you'll see an off-duty cop smoking a bong and you'll get kissed on the lips by your best friend's wife and you'll see diapers floating and there's bats in nearby caves, apparently.
Yeah, and we have a cameo from Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters as the guy who's like, taking cornhole way too seriously.
Yeah, that's always great. As you'll see, people bring a lot of bread, but not a lot of sandwich stuff. So it's all just loaves of bread, and no one brought like meat or lettuce for the bread. Mm-hmm. And I do like how, and actually, this sketch actually has a pretty solid ending where they talk about how after all this insanity, after the Dave Grohl's character blows his hands off with fireworks and the ambulance comes, rolls into the lake and then gets claimed by the lake. After all that, they all meet up at the church the next day. And then it cuts to them in church and we see Dave Grohl's character who got his hand blown off. He's a preacher.
Yep. Yeah, it was a cute ending. Again, I liked it. It was funny. It was, well observed, lots of specific details in the comedy and, didn't overstay its welcome, which I always like.
Yeah, no, this was a solid sketch, too. I dug it quite a bit, and damn it if that song ain't catchy as all hell. I actually kind of liked Down on a Lake Beach.
It kind of is catchy, yeah. I will give it that.
It's a catchy little ditty, and mm-hmm. I dug it. So far, 2 for 2. We're doing all right here.
Okay, all right. Next, we have Trick or Treat with Fran Drescher. This is playing on the recent story about how, because the SAG after strike is still ongoing, they advise actors not to wear Halloween costumes promoting characters that are owned by the studios, which it just seems like such a weird thing.
It is a weird thing, and I even think some of the actors kind of push back on that. Like, I know Ryan Reynolds put something out about, have my kids wear Deadpool costume, I'll call them a scab. But then, like, I think after that, SAG-AFTRA came out and was like, all right, well, of course your kids can wear it. Like, they kind of walked it back a bit. They were like, no, of course your kids can wear whatever they want. But yeah, it is a weird thing that they kind of.
It's just it's a weird thing where it's just kind of like this is the hill you're choosing to die on. I mean,
yeah, it was a weird thing. So of course, it's perfect fodder for a sketch. And we have Nate and Ego as a couple giving out candy to a kid at Halloween, and interrupting them, we have Sarah Sherman coming out as Fran Drescher. You know, right. Advising the kids to go home and change, and because of the SAG-AFTRA strike, they can only wear costumes that are SAG-AFTRA approved, like Harry Potter, as described in the books, or
I look just a little bit off, or minor characters from the Bible that never show up in movie or TV adaptations,
like Zoheth, son of Ishi, who beget Ben Zoheth.
Yeah. Why do you need Iron Man? And then we have Hoda Kotb from the Today Show, who says, and then we have a little girl who comes out and she says, the wig is fake, but the wine is real.
I will say that the kids did a great job.
They did. Like most every kid in there had a line. You know, there was one kid who was dressed up as Mario and she was like, yeah, just switch his hat. And now he's not a plumber, but he's the chef from on that box of Italian food.
Right. Or the kid dressed up as Wolverine. It took away his claws. Now he's any gay guy in his 50s.
I saw that. I was like, please let Kevin Israel be watching right now.
Shout out to Kevin Israel.
He's a big Wolverine fan, and he's dressed up as Wolverine quite a bit. Oh. And it, like, pretty much exactly the look the kid had with the the muscle tee and the claws and the hair. And I was like, please, I think I'm gonna post that sketch and tag him in it, because I want him to see this. I need him to see this.
Yeah, post it on his Facebook page. It's the only
Yes.
He's like, what the hell, bro? I don't know. What are your thoughts on this sketch? I thought
it was all right. I thought it was weird because that story is like at least a week or two old now.
Yeah.
So I think it had faded in the memory a little bit with all the other shit going on. Most of the controversy mostly died down, I think, you know?
Yeah, it had, but I mean, I get why they brought it back, because it's perfect for this Halloween episode.
True.
Bring out, but it's, I don't know. Does everybody like know about this whole, the thing with the Halloween costume that SAG-AFTRA asked them not to dress up? I feel like there's only a thing, you know, like entertainment nerds like us know about. Like, I don't know if everybody.
Oh, that's an interesting point. You think it was like a little too inside baseball?
Maybe a little. Like, I know like, the average person probably.
I mean, I don't know if I was really only seeing like a stink being raised about this, like on Twitter.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much the average person on the street knows about this.
Yeah, so
I think they explained it pretty well, so I think you could get behind the premise of it. And I like the runner in it where she kept calling Nate's where the Fran Drescher kept calling Nate's character like something, and he's like, "Oh yeah, you're dressed up like Sloth from the Goonies," and he's like, "These are literally my street clothes."
Right. And then
she's like, "You're like Kevin Bacon's pedophile friend in that movie," and then he knows the character by name, and Ego's like, "Wait, why do you know the character's name?"
Yeah, that was okay, but like
that was cute.
There was that one point where like Sarah basically looks into the camera, basically breaking down what the strike is all about and comparing it to Kit Kat bars.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that might have been like a little preachy, a little too like getting close to being too preachy. A little bit.
Yeah, I can see that.
Soapboxy. I was like,
yeah. Because it seemed a little less like in service of the sketch and more in service of the strike.
Yeah. And like,
which I'm all for. Right. I mean, that's great. Support the strike. And yeah, I want them to get everything they're asking for and more.
Yeah.
But
yeah, like, of course. Like, I'm totally pro strike. I believe the actors should.
I don't think you are.
I've been nothing but pro strike.
I don't think you are. You criticize that joke, therefore you are against the strike, and you want the execs to have all the Kit Kats.
I'm part of the problem.
That's what I'm getting out of this.
All I'm saying is, hey man, hey, you know, why don't we think about what the execs are going through? Like, have we thought about that?
Have we thought about how tough it is to plant stories in the trades all week?
Like, I mean, some execs only have two helicopters. I mean, I don't know how you can live like that.
No, I don't. I don't either. I don't either.
I mean, they're living like animals.
It's yeah. That's
yeah. But I mean, no, seriously. Like, I thought that part was like. I know. I saw some people online saying it's a little, like. I mean, I hate this word, but like Clapter, like a little, almost a little too much Claptery, and I was like, I might.
Yeah, Clapter. In case you don't know, I mean, that's when you get more applause than laughs. You know, like, you know, because applause is basically saying yes, we agree with you. And, you know, laughter is like, we find that funny, and it's more desirable to find, to get laughter than clapter.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. With this sketch, I was like, oh, I kind of, like, this was basically the first sketch where they addressed the SAG-AFTRA strike, and I don't know if this was the home run I was kind of hoping for them to talk about exactly what's going on with the strike. But, I mean, the kids...
It's a tough thing to address, yeah.
It is. But, I mean, I did like the kids... And it does have a few good lines here and there. So overall, that was all right.
You'd think that SNL could do something where, like, just have, like, a bunch of actors on the picket lines, and you could do one of those sketches where everybody breaks out their various impressions, you know?
Oh, wow.
That could be fun.
Oh, wow. I didn't even think of that. That's not a bad idea, my friend.
I just thought of this right now.
SNL, you can run with that idea. Just credit us.
Look, if the strike is still going on when Timothy Chalamet hosts, you guys can have that idea free and clear.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. We gift that to you, the SNL, us, the SNL nerds. All we ask.
Or maybe I'll write it up and I'll submit a packet this week.
Ooh, that'd be good too.
Yeah.
All right. There you go.
I have no idea who does what impressions though. So already my sketch is collapsing under its own weight.
Wow, already this is falling apart before our very eyes.
But that was a nice 10-second dream.
It was good. It was nice. It was nice. It was nice while we had it.
Yeah, it was nice to imagine that things might get better for like a few seconds.
Yeah, no, back to dread.
Back to the never-ending existential dread that is my life.
This sketch, I thought it was all right, but I don't know. I feel, I mean, we got.
I wasn't too nuts. Yeah, about it overall.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to see Sarah Sherman anchor a sketch, but it wasn't. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the home run I was hoping it'd be.
Yeah. I thought it was funny that the little girl playing the Fran Drescher nanny did the nanny laugh better than Sarah did.
Yeah.
It sounded like Sarah was kind of imitating the kid.
Yeah, like I thought Sarah Sherman was like a huge like Fran Drescher fan. She's talked about how much she likes her fashion online. So I figure, oh, she must have a solid nanny laugh. And not really.
Not so much. Not so much. No, the kid did it better.
Yeah. The kid stays in the picture.
Yes. Yes. So yeah. So just a so-so sketch, I thought.
Yeah, so-so.
So next we have our musical guests for the week: Foo Fighters.
Foo Fighters.
Foo Fight. Yeah, Christopher Walken introducing him. Always fun to see. Foo Fighters.
Foo Fighters.
Foo Fighters.
He puts the.
I just want to do that for 5 minutes.
Why does he put the emphasis on fighters and not foo?
Because he can.
Fair enough.
Because he's Christopher Walken. That is what he does, sir.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah, we got two performances. Our first one, Rescued, off the new album. And
Great, great song.
Yeah, pretty fantastic.
I was really impressed with that.
And the second one was The Glass, and they were joined by Who
was George Bluth's girlfriend on Arrested Development.
Yep, that's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Her?
Exactly. And, her actually, this is her second performance on SNL. She performed back in 2020 on the Adele episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I definitely liked Rescued a lot more than The Glass. I thought The Glass wasn't as good of a song, but I enjoyed both performances. I thought they were both, you know, very impressive. I was just more impressed with Rescued in general.
Yeah. Like, with Foo Fighters, you know what you're going to get. The band always gives it. They're all... No lip syncing, nothing like that. It's all just
lots of energy. They're just gonna come in, blow the roof off the joint, and
Just give it's all energy. They put their heart and soul on the stage, and you see it and you feel it, and it's always a damn good time. So I could never hate on a Foo Fighters performance.
I mean it was a great Foo Fighters performance.
That's right. I like both performances. Get to see her kind of. In the mix there, that was a surprise. I did not expect to see her, and thumbs up for both performances. I really dug them both.
Yeah, yeah. Good sets by Foo Fighters.
Foo Fighters!
Oh, we have fun. Next weekend update, Colin Jost, Michael Che. Hey.
Michael Che!
Let's see. Michael Che.
Colin Jost!
You know, and we talked about how the Republicans apparently generated a new Speaker of the House with AI, which I thought was a good line. I mean, they had some good lines about Mike Johnson in this week.
Yeah.
This week's update.
Yeah, because, I mean, basically he's pretty much somebody who no one knows. He's a bit of a blank slate. But, you know, of course, I mean, they've dug a little bit into his past about how he's pretty MAGA and he... he's been, like, you know, known as homophobic, and he says homosexuality is bizarre and deviant, which is also the name of two great gay clubs in the West Side.
Yeah, yeah. I also like the joke they had about how he said he just thought that the Republicans just got fed up with trying to find a speaker, wrote down a fake name, and then they were like, "Oh wait, that's a real guy." yeah, that was cute.
Yeah, yeah. I know. Che had a great joke about Prince Charles going to Kenya, acknowledging Britain's role in the slave trade, and he'll also try to return Meghan, which the audience was like, "Oh shit!"
Yeah, and he's like, "I just report the news, people."
Yeah.
Did you when you were watching it? Now you watched the show live. I watched it streaming on Peacock this morning. Did they have the weird screw up during the live show? I'm assuming. The sound screw up.
I don't think so. Which sounds group?
Okay. Well, when I watched on update, Jost did the joke about what's his face testifying against Donald Trump.
Oh, right. And then Cohen.
About Michael Cohen testifying against Trump, and then he cuts to the footage of the two rats fighting each other, and then it cuts over to Che to do his next joke, and then the audio from Jost was like replaying, and we're hearing both, and it was like drowning out Che's joke.
Oh, I don't think so.
It's not like that on YouTube. I rewatched the Weekend Update segment on YouTube, but when I watched it on Peacock this morning, that flub was in there.
Oh, I don't think I noticed that.
So, okay. Maybe it's just a weird glitch that's on Peacock, and it wasn't on the live show. You definitely would have noticed it if you were watching it live.
Okay, all right. I don't remember anything like that.
Okay.
Maybe I need to pay the fuck attention to these things I watch.
Well, I mean that sounds kind of radical, but
let's not go crazy yet.
Yeah. All right. Well, I just thought it was notable. Anyway.
okay.
We had a desk segment with Sarah as Colin's agent JJ Gordon, talking about how the strike has affected Colin's acting roles. And, you know, just basically another excuse for Sarah Sherman to rip on Colin for a few minutes.
Yeah, just basically like, "Hey, Colin, I got you this great part in a movie where you play Jared Fogle."
Not all heroes are sandwiches, the Jared Fogle story.
Yeah. You want to play in the Jurassic Park porn version, Jurassic Pork? Which, I swear I've heard that Jurassic Pork joke like back in the 90s, like years ago.
Really?
It feels like an old joke I heard when I was like in college or something. I don't know.
I can believe that two people could come up with that joke independently.
Yeah,
I mean, that's not a big stretch.
Yeah, that's true.
I liked how she said that they turned him down for the role in Netflix's Dahmer because they wanted somebody with the slightest glimmer of humanity.
Yeah, like, and they also talk about, I got you a promotional deal with Jersey Mike's. And it's like, "Oh, I like their sandwiches." Like, no, Jersey Mike. He's a guy who runs a kill shelter in Newark.
Yeah, yeah.
Jersey!
Jersey! And then she talked about his documentary, "Just the Two of Us, My Summer with Epstein." And then there's a shot of Colin Jost with Jeffrey Epstein. So.
Yeah. I don't know. Not the best outing, I thought. Like, the whole thing with Sarah busting Jost chops, like, there are some times where it works, and there are some times where it's like, it kind of feels like it's kind of run its course. Like, I thought, like...
Is that getting played out for you? Okay.
Maybe a little. But then again, sometimes it's... Like, the time she did it with... Genesis Fry, the clairvoyant person.
Uh-huh.
I thought that was really funny. Because, like, maybe the jokes were better or sharper. The jokes here kind of they felt kind of easy. A little.
I like it the best when it's just Sarah doing it as herself, and she gets to do the this just in, and then, you know, twists everything that Jost just said into the worst possible thing. I think that's the funniest, you know, platonic ideal version of this bit.
Right.
But I like that they're still trying to find variations on it.
Right.
So it sounds like I liked it more than you did.
Yeah, a little bit. Like, I thought it was okay, but I was like, oh, this kind of sounds played out, and it's kind of, it doesn't hit quite as hard as her past iterations of it. I'll say that.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah, it's not going to have as much the element of surprise.
Yeah, possibly. But yeah, I thought it was passable, I guess I'll say.
Passable. You hear that, Sarah Sherman? It's passable.
Yes.
So that's what Darren thought.
I don't talk like that.
Well, he was adjusting his monocle.
I don't talk like that.
Oh, don't you?
I don't. You make a...
Yeah.
I don't talk like that. What are you talking about?
Darren has a polo sweater like tied around his neck right now. You folks can't see it, but yeah.
Yes, I'm doing this podcast while holding onto a tennis racket.
Yeah. He's going to go play some squash right after this and then just, mock some other people for making less money than he does.
Yes, I'll be sipping tea at the country club with Muffy and Buffy.
Yes.
You know, just making fun of the poors, as I'm wont to do.
Yes, as he does.
Indeed. I'll be there. I'll be playing at Bushwood later on, trying to get rid of Roddy Danger.
Are you my pal?
Bye, Bushwood!
Anyway, so, I mean, that was more or less update. Oh, and they had a joke at the end about olive oil, and so people in Jersey are going to have to use water to shower now.
Oh, yeah, because the cost of, the price of olive oil is going up, so Jersey have to watch your water. Because Jersey!
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just noting it because it was a joke that was tangentially related to New Jersey. So, no. You know.
I respect that. Next up, we got Airplane.
Airplane, starring Robert Hayes and Julie Haggerty and Leslie Nielsen.
That's right. Don't call me Shirley.
Don't call me Shirley. It takes place, as you might suspect, on an airplane. Chloe Fineman's character goes into labor. She needs a doctor. And, Devin, her husband, says, is there a doctor on board? And Nate stands up and says, well, I'm a lawyer. And it turns out there aren't any doctors on the plane, but everybody starts arguing what the second best occupation is.
Right. Again, like after that, Dismukes pops, because he says, like, I'm a lawyer, and that's like the second best job. And then Dismukes pops up and said, hey, look, I'm not a doctor, but I don't think the lawyer is the second best job. It's got to be like engineer, right?
Yeah, yeah. And it starts a whole debate. Chloe Trost gets up and she's like, I also have a very tough job. I'm a teacher. And then after she reveals it, people start booing her. And we see Heidi like throw something at her.
Yeah, somebody threw a piece of paper at her.
Yeah, which was very funny. I like how everybody just instantly turned on the teacher. We have a totally random cameo from Bowen Yang, who looks like he's in the Black Eyed Peas or something. He just gets up and he's like, I'm a kind of doctor. And everyone's like, sit down. And he's like, okay.
And then I think Heidi comes out and says, well, I have the toughest job of all. I'm a mother. And everybody applauds and claps. And then Nate says, all right, no, for real, in terms of real stuff, like jobs that pay money, what's the second best job?
Yeah. Yeah. I like how like Chloe Fineman is trying to be like, none of this matters. I need a doctor. And Dismukes is like, well, okay, obviously we don't have a doctor here. So we have to figure out what the second best occupation is. And then we'll be in a position to help you.
Exactly.
I like how he said it like, this makes perfect sense. And yeah. And I also like how Mikey Day comes out as the pilot and he just comes out of the bathroom and Dismukes is like, wait, if you're here, who's piloting the plane? And Mikey just goes, oh my God, the autopilot genius.
Yeah.
I like how he just turned on a dime like that. That was very funny.
That was very funny. And then the sketch ends with Dave Grohl coming out in a doctor's outfit saying, oh, does somebody ask for a doctor? Because that's my Halloween costume.
Yeah. And I like how, I admire how Dave Grohl doesn't even stop chewing gum.
Nope, not at all.
He just comes out. He's like, nope, I'm going to keep on chewing this gum because I'm a fucking rock star.
Hey, you need a doctor? What's going on here, hey?
Yeah.
Love it.
He's like, you know, I'm just having fun cameoing in this SNL sketch. I'm going to keep chewing gum.
Yeah. Not a bad sketch. I actually thought it was a nice little, what you call it? Like a little sketch where all the cast gets to do a little something.
I enjoyed it. I don't think it was great, but I think it was a nice welcome little bit of absurdity towards the end of the night, which is always fun.
Yeah,
I like the sketches that have like the insane troll logic, and we just kind of follow that to its illogical conclusion. So I found it fun in that regard.
Yeah, no, absolutely. This was not a bad sketch. I was like, oh, okay, this is not too shabby.
It's got a good beat, and you can dance to it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I dug this one. I dug it.
And let's see. Lastly, we have Please Don't Destroy in a sketch called Dog Food, D-A-W-G.
Dog. And, yeah, so it's basically them, of course, in their office, of course. Ben saying...
SNL writing night, by the way.
Of course, as always. I think they're talking about getting something to eat. John Higgins says, oh, yeah, I'm on this new meal service now. And it's like... And then Ben says, oh, you mean like HelloFresh or Blue Apron? And John's like, no, it's this new thing called dog food. And it's literally them eating dog food.
He's just eating dried dog food out of a metal bowl, cut over to Martin. He's like, putting his face down in the bowl and eating it like that. Ben is, of course, horrified. And, and that's pretty much it, really. It's a pretty quick sketch, even by... Please Don't Destroy standards.
Yeah, it's like...
It's just like 2 minutes.
Yeah, not a lot of escalation. It's like literally them saying to Ben, what's the problem? It's just dog food. It says on a bag, it's okay to eat. And I think at one point Ben tried to take the bag away from John, and then John like barks at him. So Ben has like spray him with a water bottle. And it's just that, and then... He says, all right, if this is freaking you out, I'll just eat the wet kind of dog food. And then Ben's like, oh my God, it's disgusting. It's like, well, I'll put ketchup on it. And then it ends with him taking a bite and cut to John Higgins died from he died from doing what he loved, 2018 to 2023, thereby insinuating that he's a 5-year-old.
Yeah.
And so that's pretty much it. Yeah, this one I thought was,
I didn't think it was quite up to their usual standards, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, they cut it short before it got bad. Like, it was on its way to being, like, pretty stinkeroo, but they cut it before it could become too stinkeroo. But, guys eating dog food. Hilarious.
Mildly amusing.
Yeah. And and then that's the episode. Then they cut to title card for to sort of acknowledge the passing of commemorate. Thank you. The passing of Matthew Perry, who unfortunately passed away this weekend, surprisingly.
Yeah,
which is a real huge bummer.
I mean, so sad. The guy was. He was only 54, and he was a stupendously successful actor, really talented guy. I mean, it was just on one of the most successful TV shows of all time. But I read his memoir earlier this year, Friends, Lovers, and the Big Terrible Thing. Mm. And he goes into, lots of detail about his drug addiction and all the hardships and health problems that caused him. I mean, he was... it very nearly died like several times, and he was, he was basically devoting the rest of his life to, helping others through their addictions and things like that. And, it sucks that he's gone before the book's even out in paperback.
Yeah. It's a bummer. I mean, he's one of those guys who, and I know he had like a really kind of big blow up in the 90s, like after Friends, of course, and he did like a bunch of movies where he kind of played the same character a little bit, but like he was just so good. I think a lot of people kind of forget how really good he was at comedy. He had like some really sharp comedic timing, but he could also do drama very well too. Like, I think that kind of, I don't know. I mean, I know people, he got to show what he could do on Friends a lot. That's where most people know him. That's where most people will remember him. And even he knows that that'll be his legacy, or that was his legacy. Yeah. But like, I don't know. I felt like he could have done like so much more. It seems like, it felt like he never got his flowers, I guess.
I wrote on Twitter and on Facebook yesterday. He was on one of the most successful television programs of all time, Friends, and yet somehow he was still like underrated. Because I mean, he was so good, and I, you know, for me, I think he was a standout in the Friends cast because he was like he was one of those actors who could definitely elevate his material, especially when he was doing comedy. You know, he could just play. He could give a line or read that made it even funnier. And yeah, he was good at and straight roles as well. He made the point in his memoir that like he'd gotten a lot of accolades for Friends and stuff, but like every Emmy he's won, it was for a dramatic role. And you know, it seems just a shame that he never won an Emmy for Friends, you know, because I feel like he should have won at least once.
Yeah, he definitely deserved it. He was solid. He was good in another TV show that we talked about on this podcast, Studio 60. He was
very good in the show. I mean, the show has problems, but he's not one of them. He's excellent in the show.
Right.
And the show is worth checking out, at least for him. And yeah.
It's a bummer.
It was just so sad to see. And, you know, he was only 54, which is just like a few years older than me. And so it's just... You know, you're not expecting somebody that relatively young to go.
Yeah, that really.
You know, even with the issues that he had and the problems that he had, and you know, just such a sad way to go.
I think even now I'm seeing it online where people are kind of talking about him now and kind of like really being like, "Yeah, this guy was like he was my favorite character on Friends, and he's the reason like I have the comedy sensibilities I do." And like, I think people are starting to I mean, it's a bummer that it took his passing for this to happen, but like, it seems like people are starting to realize, oh wait, he was a lot more talented and a lot more sharper with comedy and everything than I realized and than I gave him credit for, and like, I should have really.
I mean, he was just one of those people who was so good, he just made it look really easy,
right?
And so I think consequently, people took him a little for granted because of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, which is a shame. So, yeah. So Darren and I, you know, we're talking about, you know, gosh, because it's so sad, it's so unexpected. We wanted to do something to commemorate and celebrate Matthew Perry a bit. And we talked a little bit about it. And, you know, we were racking our brains like, well, what do we do? Has he done a movie with an SNL cast member? And the big one, of course, is Almost Heroes, which was Chris Farley's last film.
Yeah,
and
directed by Christopher Guest, and we talked about that. But that one, I've never seen it. But that one,
me neither.
That one is pretty much universally maligned as being doo doo, as the kids say.
Yeah, nobody has much of anything good to say about that film, and it's also Chris Farley's last film, and like I mean, even Matthew Perry was talking about how in his memoir that. You know, he didn't think it was very good. So it didn't feel like a good way to commemorate him. And then we were like, well, he did host the show back in 97. Maybe we should watch that. But, you know, we decided rather do a movie. And Darren did a little research. And you found a couple other movies that he starred in with some SNL cast members.
I can only find, like, two. Like, there was one.
Right.
The movie 17 again with Zac Efron. Brian Doyle Murray is in there as a janitor. And the only other one I could find was Fools Rush In, the movie he did with Salma Hayek that has Siobhan Fallon Hogan, who we've talked about, who we've interviewed on this podcast.
Yeah, we did interview her a couple of years ago. I think that was, what was that, around episode 100, 150, something like that?
I believe so.
I think it was 150, if I remember correctly. I think I'd like to do Fools Rush In because I know that was a movie that Matthew Perry was proud of. And, you know, he's the lead in that. And I think, you know, that'll be a good look at, you know, what he could do. So.
Okay.
So I vote for that personally.
And I second it.
Yay.
The yays have it.
Yay.
Yay. So, yeah, join us next week when we talk about the movie Fools Rush In.
Yes.
With Matthew Perry, Salma Hayek, and Siobhan Fallon Hogan.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's a, you know, worst possible reason to be watching it, but, you know, hopefully we can, hopefully it'll give us some entertainment and some good laughs.
Absolutely. But, you know, speaking of laughs, let's talk about this episode as a whole. What did we think about the Nate Bargatze Foo Fighters episode?
Foo Fighters. I think it was a decent episode overall. I think it was pretty good. Certainly better than the first two we've gotten so far this season. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
I'd agree. Like, this episode was definitely a step up. I like how we got a couple of sketches that were pretty, like, writer-heavy, like, with the dialogue, like, with the Washington sketch and the airplane sketch. Seemed like kind of dialogue writer-heavy. And I was like, oh, I like this. This is
like a little less performance-driven, a little more script-driven?
Yeah, no, I mean, I like performance-driven stuff for sure, but, like, I feel like the dialogue-heavy stuff, I feel like we haven't gotten that in a while. It feels like almost like a throwback to see something like this, where it's like, oh, yeah, this was, like, you know, back when it was mostly dialogue, and they were kind of reliant on that. So, like, I got a kick out of seeing that that type of vibe again. So, yeah, overall, I thought this was a pretty solid episode, for sure.
Yeah, I think it was. I feel like they got their groove back, and, you know, I hope the season continues on in this vein. By the way, did you notice that the good nights, where, you know, everybody's gathered up on home base and they're thanking everybody. If you look at the good nights again, Christopher Walken is just staring like dead into the camera, and it's hilarious.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if he's doing that on purpose or he's really just kind of out of it.
Yeah. If it was just like, you know, like his equivalent of resting bitch face or something, but he's just staring dead ahead, arms just like right hanging loose at his side. And it's just the scariest thing ever.
It is.
It really kind of cracked me up during the good nights.
It is happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. Happy Halloween.
It was fun. It would be fun to see Chris Walken come back and host one more time if he's filling up to it. I mean, I know that's, you know, he's getting up there, and I know that's probably a lot for somebody his age, but
he's an older fellow for sure. But
he's an older fellow, but it would be really fun to see him host one more time.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I, you know, just one more time for the team. Just one more heist. Come on.
Exactly. I mean, he's in the Five Timers Club, right? He's gotta be.
It's gotta be. I'll look it up. I'm pretty sure he's.
Yeah, look it up.
Okay. Christopher Walken. Oh, he's 80 years old.
Yeah, okay. I figured he was getting around there.
Yeah, but I mean, so is Mick Jagger. He was on there last time.
I feel like Mick Jagger probably has a slightly more active lifestyle than Christopher Walken. It's just a hunch.
Yeah, I could see that. You know, he's. He has to dress up as a nun and bang other nuns, apparently.
I don't think he actually did that for the sketch. I think he was just saying he was doing that. It's Mick Jagger, so who knows?
He's a method actor.
Yeah, maybe he banged a few nuns for that sketch. Who knows?
I'm a method actor, baby. I don't know. That was not a good Mick Jagger impression. I'll admit that.
It wasn't, but I was going to let it pass. Have you found out how many times Walken has hosted yet?
He's definitely in the Five Timers Club.
That was my main question.
Yeah, he is. He is in the Five Timers for sure.
Okay. All right.
Gotta have more cowbell.
That was the essence of my question, right?
Really
there.
Explore the space.
I was just wondering if he had hosted five times, and it turns out yes, he has hosted five times. Possibly more. Who knows? Science is not yet found an answer to that question.
There's no way to tell. None.
No way to tell.
Nope. Speaking of telling, let's tell on over.
See, I was trying to buy you more time so you could get a definitive answer.
Oh, is that what you were doing?
I thought I was covering while you were like still trying to look it up so you could say, oh, by the way, he's hosted six times or seven times or whatever.
Oh, wow.
But I guess you weren't working on that question anymore.
I cannot read signals.
Okay.
I am terrible at this.
Okay, but, as I said, do we want to find it now? Now that we've brought the show to a screeching halt twice?
Hold on, looking it up. Okay, I got the answer. Here we go. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. He's hosted 7 times.
7. Wow, that's impressive. Okay, so he's hosted 7 times. So he's maybe he's in his own exclusive 7-timers club.
Maybe. Yeah, and the last time he hosted was April 5th, 2008.
Yeah, okay. So bring him back for an 8th time. Have him in the opening monologue. Have him just start his own exclusive 8-timers club. And everyone will try to tell him, Chris, that's not a thing. And he's like, I'm in the 8-timers club, baby. And there you go. That's also going in my SNL packet, by the way.
The 8-timers club. We're 3 the better than 5.
It's 3 times better
than 5. Not as good as 9, though. And 10, forget about it.
Yeah. That could be a very good monologue, I think.
I think so. I think we got something here.
I think we got something.
Yeah, SNL writers, if you're listening, and I know you are, hit us up. Yeah.
Hit us up.
Yeah, holler at
anyway, let's see what the people thought of this week's episode with Nate Bargatze and Foo Fighters. Mm-hmm. Our friend Manette Moratti says, I don't understand how SNL biffed on Sarah leading a Halloween sketch and didn't use any of her usual squirm humor for it, instead giving her the most middling material of the night, all related to the SAG strike, the SAG strike.
Yeah, I've noticed Manette like online talking about how she's kind of, because it's a Halloween episode, this seems like the time you let Sarah Squirm go wild and do her body horror Sarah Squirm thing, but
yeah,
it seems like they didn't let her do that. And, like, I guess people are starting to worry, like, oh, are they trying to rein in her weirdness to, like, make it more palatable for middle America type of thing?
I mean, yeah, true. We haven't had a super weird Sarah Squirm type sketch yet this year. But I assume, you know, she's still working on it and doing that sort of thing. And I'm sure we'll see another thing like that before the end of the year, certainly.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not worried yet.
No, not yet. No, no. Let's not worry yet. People don't freak out.
Yeah.
So John Anais at Burtonesque says, to me, we have the first good episode of the season here. Bargatze's delivery elevated everything he was in, and the George Washington sketch was the runaway highlight. It reminds me of Gary Goldman's state abbreviations bit, but it works well framed as a very writerly sketch. I would agree with that. Like the premise of the sketch kind of felt like something maybe Gary Goldman or Seinfeld would joke about back in the day.
Yeah, yeah. And, by the way, I think I've recommended this on the podcast before, but Gary Goldman's, How the States Got Their Abbreviations. It's a stand-up bit he did on Conan a number of years ago. Hilarious.
Very good. I mean,
very funny.
Anything by Gary Goldman is fucking...
Oh, yeah. Action. No, he's terrific. He's terrific. Mm-hmm. Our friend Boardman Gets Paid. He says, hi, guys. I left a Cat Williams special and watched SNL on my phone at a Waffle House after a college homecoming. That first sentence sounds like a Mad Lib.
Okay.
All that to say that they need to pick a Biden and stick with it. This cold open was painful. Great episode, though. Every sketch hit.
Okay.
And there's a reply after that. Can you see what... Did he write more after that?
He did. He said, and I delivered my son on a bathroom floor, so you do not necessarily need a doctor. LOL. Pimps out.
Wow. Okay.
That's
this...
Woo.
Wow. Lots of information about Boardman in these 2 tweets here.
I have so many questions.
He left a Cat Williams special, watched SNL on his phone at a Waffle House after a college homecoming. Wow.
What is your life, Boardman?
And also delivered his son on a bathroom floor. Wow.
Just like the most interesting man in the world.
What is going on with you, Hot Lion?
Yeah, wow.
My goodness.
You're living a wild life, my guy.
Wow. Okay. And our friend Nick Storr says, haven't seen it all yet. Maybe the first third. When are we going to start talking about the fact SNL has a first live sketch of the night problem? It's almost killing any momentum the show has. Mm. I'm not sure if you're talking about the cold open or if you're talking about the first live sketch after the monologue. I'm going to assume the first sketch after the monologue. And yeah, I'd say a lot of them have been kind of on the weak side lately, which.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't quite get. Yeah. The first sketch after the monologue should really blow it out of the water. And yeah, a lot of times it's just like, oh, why is this so early in the night?
Yeah. I think what the first one for the Pete was the Travis Kelce sketch, the NFL. The first one for the Bad Bunny was the rap battle, which was okay.
Yeah,
I guess. Yeah, I'm not quite sure why they put their not as strong sketch so early in the show and then have it build up to get to the better sketches. I don't know. Would it maybe be better if they start off with their stronger sketches and then kind of dip to the weaker ones just so people are like, well, that last sketch was good, so maybe the next one will be as good and not as weak as this one. So maybe that's, I don't know. I'm just,
yeah, it's weird.
It is
weird. I don't know. I don't get it. I really don't get it.
I do not get it. Yeah.
Speaking of tweets, I just saw a tweet. Our friends at the Saturday Night Network, they've came up with a graphic of every Joe Biden impression we've seen on Saturday Night Live. And ooh, it's been a lot. So in chronological order, we have Kevin Nealon, who played him back in his Senate days.
Oh, wow.
Jason Sudeikis, who, of course, played him when he was VP. Woody Harrelson, who played him a couple times. John Mulaney's played him. Jim Carrey, Alex Moffat, then James Austin Johnson, Pete Davidson, and then finally Mikey Day. So we've got nine Bidens.
Ninden.
Yeah, that's wow.
That is wild.
That is wild. That is, it's the Wild West out there, man.
Oh my lord. Yeah, that's pretty bonkers. But yeah. I mean, I don't know. Out of all of them, I would say, I mean, I want to say JAJ was the best, but I know more people probably think Sudeikis was like the more definitive one.
I have the greatest nostalgic affection for Sudeikis' Biden. I don't know if his take on the character would, you know, really works in the age of his presidency. So I think James Austin Johnson's was a good Biden for that. But yeah, I guess going forward, Lauren was like, yeah, we really need two different people because if it's going to be Trump,
right,
you know, we want to have our options open for that. So
yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I could see that. I think that's the reason why they're having this so they could have, because it looks like it'll be Biden and Trump next year. So they're just, I guess, covering their bases.
I mean, who knows? Anything can happen. We're like a year away from that. So
we could all be dead tomorrow. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean,
but hopefully we're not. So yeah, we could record more episodes of SNL. Nerds.
Do you think Cat Williams was at the College Homecoming?
Are you back on the?
I'm back on that. I'm just staring at this tweet. I left a Cat Williams special, watched SNL on my phone at a Waffle House after a College Homecoming. So was Cat Williams at the College Homecoming?
I guess so. I mean, colleges could meet Cat's quote.
And if not, like, what was the sequence of events? Did you go to the College Homecoming and then go to a Cat Williams special? Or did you do the Cat Williams special, then go to the College Homecoming, and then the Waffle House?
I don't know. This is...
Boardman, just let us know what the sequence of events was.
Yeah, please. We're not going to be able to sleep until we get some answers.
Yeah, we're not judging. We're just very, very curious.
Yeah. What is your life, my friend?
And I really hope that this was a different night than the night you delivered your son on a bathroom floor. Because if it wasn't, that was an event-filled evening. Yeah, oh my goodness.
Maybe he delivered his kid on the bathroom floor at the Waffle House.
Whew. Well, wow. I hope for his sake that, and his son's sake and his wife's sake, that's not true, but maybe? I don't know.
Maybe they got free waffles out of it. I don't know.
I'm very confused. Yeah.
Yeah, like Boardman, you're fascinating.
You're living a life, man.
Living the dream.
So anyway, yeah, next week, Fools Rush In with Matthew Perry.
And then the week after that, SNL is they're taking a week off, and they'll be back on November 11th with Timothy Chalamet as host and the musical guest Boy Genius.
Boy Genius, who I don't know much about except they've opened for Taylor Swift.
So Boy Genius, for those that don't know, they're like a indie folk rock band. They're actually like a super group, consists of Julian Baker, Phoebe Bridgers, who's been on SNL before, and Lucy Dacus. And they're a very popular band. They just came out with an album a couple of weeks ago. And they're big with the kids. And all three members are queer, I guess I can say. So they have they have a big fan base within the queer community. A lot of people really like this new album that they came out with. It's some pretty strong stuff. So, them coming on SNL kind of seems like a no-brainer. So I'm looking forward to it. I don't know much about the band myself. I know Phoebe Bridgers from when she last performed in SNL. I liked her stuff. So this seems to be like it seems like their music is more in the vein of that folk rock, like indie rock type of vibes.
So, okay. Yeah,
I'm in for it. And Timothy Chalamet, who hosted a few years back, I'm actually looking forward to seeing him host again, because to me, that episode he hosted was one of the best of the season, if not the best of that season.
I'd have to look at it again, because I don't remember being overly impressed with him.
What?
Sell me on it, please.
It was the Christmas episode. It had the Lexus December to Remember sketch, the pre-tape.
That was good. That was a good sketch that he wasn't in.
He was in it. Yeah, he was.
Was he? Was he one of the kids or something?
He played the son. He was like, he played, Beck Bennett's son.
And, yeah, but let's face it. That sketch is all Beck Bennett. Come on.
All right. But it was still a solid sketch. The Rap Roundtable sketch with him and Pete Davidson.
I didn't think much of that one. Yeah.
I know. He was good. Sportsmax, which is like basically Newsmax, but for sports teams. That was like the 10-1. I thought that was pretty solid.
And they had the tiny horse thing. I remember
tiny
that.
Horse sketch. That was like the big one a lot of people liked. Like, I thought that whole episode had some bangers. I will go to bat for that.
So, I like the December to Remember commercial.
December to Remember was good.
I didn't like that because of Chalamet. I mean.
Yeah, but he was in it. So
he was in it, but it wasn't like he made the sketch or anything.
I will give you, Heidi and Mikey and Beck did all the heavy lifting, but he was in it. Yeah. So, he was fine. And there was even that coronavirus sketch with the Corona family, the COVID sketch. That was okay.
Oh, yeah, where they were like actually dressed up as the virus.
Yes, absolutely. But either way, his episode was pretty solid. So I'm looking forward to seeing him again on this episode. But even though it is kind of weird because. I thought we were kind of avoiding having actors as hosts because of the SAG strike, so I'm assuming like they're having him on the 11th, hoping that this whole SAG strike will be wrapped up by then, and then maybe by then he'll be able to promote the new Dune movie, which comes out like I think next year. So I don't know.
Yeah, that just got delayed. So
yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how they play that. But either way, November 11th, Timothy Chalamet and Boy Genius.
Yeah, yeah. So, I don't know. It's going to be an episode of SNL. I don't know. I still don't entirely get the Timothy Chalamet thing.
No, he's all right. He's fun. Actually, you know what? No, he's probably going to be there. Like, if the SAG strike ends, he'd probably be there to promote Wonka, the prequel to Willy Wonka that everybody's been clamoring for.
We don't need a.
I can feel your seething anger through this website.
Like, it was dumb enough when Tim Burton had the flashbacks in his Willy Wonka movie. You know? And it's like, I've never once been like, how did Willy Wonka get to be the way he is? I don't care. I don't fucking care about a Willy Wonka origin movie.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, a part of me also think, almost like the Joker, it's almost better that we don't know where they came from to keep the mystique and the mystery. But, the studios are going to studio and be like, oh, people want to see where you came from. Like,
yeah.
Do they, though?
No. No, I don't. Yeah. I don't give a crap about Willy Wonka's origin.
Okay.
And I really don't want to see anyone besides Gene Wilder playing Willy Wonka. So
fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Especially not, as John Mulaney says, that Timothy Chalamet son of a bitch.
Yes. And on that positive note, that's our episode.
Yay!
Thanks for listening, as always, to the podcast. As always, you can follow us on Twitter, because we refuse to call it X. Follow us at SNL Nerds Show. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram and Blue Sky and Spill. And I think I still on Mastodon and some other whatevers. At Darren Credible. D-A-R-I-N Credible.
And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram and Blue Sky at Trumbull Comic, T-R-U-M-B-U-L-L on the word comic. And please contribute to the non-productive Patreon as well, because that really helps us keep the show going. And you can get the SNL Nerd Show a few hours earlier on Mondays when the new episode drops.
That's so. Right. That's right. You can be there. You can get in on these goods nice and early.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
While the rest of the slack-jawed yokels got to wait till later in the day to get them.
That's right.
Don't you want to be better than everybody else?
Yeah. So go to non-productive.com and sign up for the Patreon there and tell them that you're doing it because the SNL nerds. Tell them the SNL nerds sent you.
Yeah, and leave a 5-star review. It's been a minute since we've gotten them. So
yes,
that helps us out too. So be a pal and give us a 5-star review there. Why don't you?
And just talk up the podcast to your friends. If you want to share it on the Twitter and on the social media, that always helps us out. And, just tell people in life.
Yeah, like IRL, as the kids say.
Yes. Yes.
They do be saying that.
Yes. Who is it? There was somebody on Twitter this week who gave us a nice shout out, and I don't have that tweet handy right now. Do you have that?
There was one. Are you talking about the one where Manette gave us a shout out?
No. This was another thing. Hang on.
Okay.
Give me a minute, and I'll find it.
Okay. All right.
I just thought of it, so I didn't have it up.
Oh, you're talking about NYAC Henderson?
I don't know. It was the jacked up review show. They said they gave some shout outs to bright podcasting minds, brilliant interviews, and charming personas.
Oh, right. Yes. Thank you, Jack.
And they included us in their list of the best TV episode recaps podcast, which, very, very nice to see. So thank you very much for that, Jacked Up Review Show.
Thank you, Jacked Up.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You can follow them on Twitter at Jacked Up Review. So.
Yeah. See, I thought you were talking about this one we got from NYAC at Gino's sleeping hat, saying SNL Nerd Show, I almost had to stop listening to go burn my ears. Darren, you did John wrong with your continuous chatter, explicit research, and lightweight threat to send pics from that diarrhea story. You, sir, are evil. So it's always good to hear from a fan.
I have no memory of this whatsoever.
It's wacky. But
when did you tell me a diarrhea story?
Oh, that's the one where on the Pete Davidson episode where they're talking about the sketch where he had diarrhea on the plane.
Okay.
And then
yeah.
I found out that was based on a real story.
Oh, okay. Yes.
And I said, well, I could send you the pictures. And you were like, no, please don't.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for not doing that.
Yes. Hey, what are friends for?
Yeah, for not sending you pictures of diarrhea stories. Right. That's what I say. That is like the baseline for my friendship.
That's what friends are for.
Are you ever going to send me pictures involving diarrhea in any way, shape, or form whatsoever? And if the answer is no, we can potentially be friends.
That's right.
Yeah, that's where I'm setting the level these days.
Good level.
Yep. So anyway, all right. Well, so we'll be back next week with Fool's Rush In. But until then, nerds out.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.